Live from New York City, it's the Gary Null Show. And now, your host, Gary Null.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Null. Nice to have you with us today. Today, it's Talk Back. No guest. Just a lot of quality information that's going to help everyone listening. I'm going to share some in-depth classroom on the air about carnitine and thyroid disease and why hyperthyroid patients need carnitine. New information from Dr. Julius Gope. Then, despite all the money we spend about heart disease, statin drugs, and bypass surgery and arterial stents, heart disease remains the number one medical killer in the United States. Today, I'll share the latest information on an enzyme called PON1, P-O-N-1. It can help combat heart disease and conditions that increase your risk of atherosclerosis. The latest from Seth Richards. We're all stressed. You can't not be stressed today because so many things are impacting us that are outside of our control. Even what we can control frequently causes us to go through stress just to get to a point where we can separate ourselves from what's causing our stress. If it's a bad relationship, or if we're unemployed and we need a job and we have to take what we can, it causes stress. New reasons to avoid it. I'll give you the latest, all scientifically based discoveries about how higher stress levels cause a shortening of your lifespan. And I'm talking about a substantial shortening of your lifespan. Michael Downey has the latest on that. From our environmental segment today, the Gaia Health talks about something that I remember way back in the 1970s. The EPA at that time had a report that it was keeping quiet because of political pressure. It showed that over 60 million Americans could not safely drink their water if they were drinking well water because of an environmental pollutants. That was serious. So I went on to interview those individuals, and then along the way they told us about fluoride. I remember talking with a whistleblowing scientist at the FDA in depth on three or four occasions about how the actual scientists at the FDA were opposed to fluoridation. They didn't want anything to do with it. Their studies showed it caused cancer, it caused immune dysfunction, all at one part per million, the amount that the average person would consume in a glass of water. So my question to him was, why don't you make recommendations to end fluoridation? We don't need it. It's a bad science. He said at the time, because of political pressure. Not from the rank-and-file, dedicated and honest scientists at the FDA, rather because of pressure from those who are appointed, and they're frequently appointed from special industry groups. Well, today, I'll give you the latest on the Environmental Protection Agency scientists, the rank-and-file. They're all opposed to water fluoridation. Why don't we know this? A good article by Heidi Stevenson from Gaia Health enlightened us on this. Now, I don't know if we'll have time beyond this, but if we do, I want to talk about how our government, the U.S. Department of Energy, which is top-heavy with people representing the corporate interest, want us to start buying products, pots and pans and bicycles and medical implants and spoons and zippers and jewelry and belt buckles that have low level radiation. How about that? And I'll tell you why it's a really bad idea. And I'm concerned that my generation of baby boomers have not got it right the second time around. And I'm going to give you some statistics on why we should pay attention. And we're not. Not yet. But we should. We have a lot to share. So let's begin. I'm going to begin with the idea of stress. Because there are a lot of studies now that show that depression-related stress results in a significant shortening of the telomeres. Now, you've heard me talk about telomeres on many occasions. Your chromosomes have, on the caps on the end, the substance is called telomeres. And the telomeres indicate aging. The longer the telomeres stay there, the longer they actually physically are, the longer you live. The shorter the telomeres, the quicker they change, the shorter you live. It's that simple. All right, then what causes a telomere to last longer on the caps of the end of the chromosomes, or what causes it to speed up? Well, it's simple. And by the way, it's simple today, but it took decades for me to come up with this information based upon doing anti-aging research on both animals and humans and extending their life. And even now, there's even more information on what can cause telomeres. So first, on the bad side, here's what causes your telomeres to speed up and age quickly and shorten. Stress, environmental toxins, heavy metals, lead, mercury, aluminum, processed foods. A big cause of shortening is glycation. Gly, G-L-Y, cation, C-A-T-I-O-N. Glycation is when you take a protein and you cook it at a high temperature. That causes glycation end products. When that goes into the body, the process of breaking that down, that highly cooked protein, a barbecued ribs, deep-fried chicken, right, a hamburger that's been grilled, a broiled fish, all of that creates glycation end products. All of that is bad for your telomeres. All of that speeds up your aging process. Simple sugars, coffee, alcohol, a lot of medications. So you see, when you look at how many things in the average person's life on an average day, it's almost everything. In fact, the latest research shows that about 75 to 90% of visits to primary care physicians are now related to the effects of stress. So literally, stress can kill you. But let's go a little more into depth. I'm going to spend more time on telomeres because I really believe we need to know about our DNA. Our DNA is our life. And often, compared to the plastic caps on the end of shoelaces, telomeres are found on the ends of coiled pieces of DNA called chromosomes. Now, they keep the chromosome material from deteriorating or fusing with other chromosomes. Every time chromosomes divide, the telomeres at the end shorten. As telomeres are increasingly consumed, they're replenished by an enzyme called telomerase reverse transcriptase. The eventual shortening of telomeres is correlated with cellular senescence, aging, and ultimately the telomeres become so depleted that the cell can no longer divide, known as a Hayflick limit, and the cell dies, apoptosis. Now, scientists have discovered that the multiple biochemical pathways of chronic stress dampen telomerase and accelerate telomere shortening. The most recent study found that the telomeres of patients with depression were over 5% shorter than telomeres of those who had not been diagnosed with depression. So that's why it's so important to understand that there's a negative effect. Now, in the United States today, we have two types of stress. We have acute stress. Let's say that you've had the loss of something important in your life, a person, a pet, your finances, maybe an injury. That's acute stress. Then chronic stress is what you just live with day in and day out. I hate the commute. It's going to take me an hour and a half each way. That's 3 hours onto my day. I'm going to be sitting in traffic. That's bad for my body. It's bad for my kidneys. It's bad for my lungs. I'm bringing in polluted air. I got to listen to stupid radio. That's chronic stress. Man, I don't like this boring work. I got to do the same work every day. I could do it blindfolded, but it pays my bills. chronic stress. Gee whiz, what happened to our passion? What happened to where everything was fun and the joy of seeing each other? Now all you do is bitch and moan. You act like you're sitting on a gigantic cactus and it's about 19 inches up your rectum. Why can't you just ever find anything to be happy about? Stress. We got to talk. Really? I thought that our problem was we never did anything but talk. No, we got to really talk. Oh, I see there's a talk, and then there's a really talk, and then there's a really, really talk. Get over it. Goodbye. I'm jumping out the window. Jesus, man. How stupid. Why can't we just get to the idea where if it isn't working, leave it? Stress. Because long before you actually leave a bad situation, you've already gone over it in your mind. You have gone over it in everyone else's mind. Everybody knows what your problems are, and they're not going to correct. I never see anything that's bad that makes itself better all over again, because it all started by disguising true motives, true intent, true interest, and then the real person comes out. And whatever that real person is, if they're on the negative dark side, it's never going to get better. Stress. So now understand that every time you react to stress chronically, you create multiple biochemical pathways, including the endocrine, the nervous, and the immune systems. And as long as stress levels are low, the effects of stressors are modulated by what is called homeostasis. That's the body's ability to maintain harmonious equilibrium by constantly readjusting to physiological processes. Cells and tissue exist in a constant changing environment, but homeostasis keeps steering internal biochemical and bioelectrical levels back to their near optimal points. However, when stress is severe, chronic, or multi-layered, let's say that you've got work that you're not happy with, maybe you're being underemployed or underpaid or underappreciated, and then you go home and you've got a relationship that is not conducive to finding joy and happiness, passion and pleasure. And then on top of that, you haven't been really exercising and your body's getting out of shape and you're feeling aches and pains. That's multi-layered stress. And that means there's many biochemical changes, and ultimately those are going to overwhelm your normal homeostatic balance. Now, that means then that you're going to end up in what is called homeostasis imbalance. And then we can look at diabetes, obesity, osteoporosis, hypertension, cardiovascular disease, infectious diseases, gastric ulcers, cancer, skin problems, neurological disorders, sexual dysfunction, psychological problems, suppressed immunity, all that do the same thing. They reduce telomerase. They shorten the telomeres. And that means, quite simply, your stress is aging you prematurely. And we have long known that homeostasis can be supported through the use of natural extracts called adaptogens. But to be effective against the onslaught of chronic stress, these pro-homeostatic botanical extracts would need to be combined so that their various mechanisms of actions would complement each other to modulate the multiple pathways of stress. Now, we know that holly basil and bacopa and cordyceps and ashwagandha all help protect against chronic stress. They all have something good going on. And then we have to look at the multiple pathways of stress. Within seconds of the stressful event, various chemicals called neurotransmitters and hormones, like cortisol, are rushing into the bloodstream. They launch the initial fight-or-flight stress adaptogen responses in which your blood sugar, your glucose, rises. blood vessels constrict, the heart races, the blood is diverted away from the digestive system. Now, these responses originate at the cellular level and within every key body system, including your neuroendocrine, your hypothalamus, pituitary, adrenal axis, the immune system, and your primary endogenous antioxidant enzyme system. Within minutes of the stressful event, and possibly lasting for several hours, weeks, or longer, specific biochemical pathways are activated within these systems. That disrupts natural homeostasis. If you cannot quickly restore equilibrium, permanent damage can occur. And the end result is chronic disease. So let's just see what we've learned here. Let's just have a little to-do list. Every time you get stressed, and that's why I say to people, if it isn't working, if it's broken, start over. Because it's not worth what you're going to pay. Stress can lead to cancer, to a stroke. This whole idea that somehow we have to double down through redemption. I'll prove to them that they were wrong, that I can make this marriage work. I can prove that I didn't, you know, I shouldn't have lost all that money in the stock market, but I'll prove. No. There is no such thing as redemption. All there is in this moment. And that's it. There's nothing else. Anyone who tells you otherwise is playing with you. So you have to understand that you've got to go beyond trying to cope inappropriately with stress. Cortisol, it's a killer. Noradrenaline, dopamine, serotonin, acetylcholine, GABA. These are your neurotransmitters. Your hypothalamus pituitary adrenal axis is going to become dysregulated. You can gain weight. You can end up not sleeping. You can end up not properly digesting and absorbing nutrients, all because of the dysregulation in this axis. Your glucose level is going to be too high because stress raises your blood sugar level. You can end up pre-diabetic or diabetic. You're going to reduce your antioxidant activity. For example, superoxide dismutase catalase. You're going to dysregulate your immune system. You're going to end up with amyloid. That you don't want. It's linked to 20 serious diseases, including Alzheimer's. It's a plaque that forms in the brain. You're going to end up with inflammation, cyclooxygenase, or COX-2 enzymes. So pain in your joints, pain in your musculature, pain in your head, gastric ulcers, lipid peroxidation, plasma creatine kinase, adenosine triphosphate. You're going to run out of energy. And then you're going to suffer from cognitive memory function. So if you want to know why you got to come to grips with stress, I just gave it to you. And by the way, on the brain, why do you think we have so many baby boomers today who are becoming senile or suffering from dementia or memory loss? And they're just a couple steps away from Alzheimer's. It works this way. Frequent or extreme stress can have devastating effects on your body and brain. Here's how. Higher cortisol levels are shown in Alzheimer's disease patients. And that's going to shoot your memory and cognitive ability right down. Stress also causes atrophy of the hippocampal dendrites, followed by apoptotic or programmed death of neurons. Stress activates the inflammatory response in the brain. An increase in pro-inflammatory factors like cytokines, IL-1 and IL-6 can alter synaptic plasticity in affecting your cognition and memory. Chronic stress was shown to accelerate the impairment of cognitive function. Now think of all the people coming back from the Iraq and Afghanistan and other areas where there's war and engagement, and they have post-traumatic stress disorder. And that speeds up aging. And magnetic resonance imaging, the MRI, the right side of the hippocampus area of the brain was found to be 8% smaller in post-traumatic stress disorder patients. Also, the moment you have higher cortisol levels, for any reason, you can shrink the brain, damage it, Stress inhibits neurogenesis, the growth of new neurons in the hippocampus. And also, chronic stress will atrophy the hippocampus. So you want to get into a better state. And that's what I hope you do. There's also what is called Tulsi, T-U-L-S-I. It's been used as a medicinal herb for thousands of years. It helps. And also, it helps with your blood sugar stabilization. It helps with inflammation, turns it down, heals gastric ulcerations, does all this stuff, does good stuff. But you got to get to where you're using it on a regular basis. And then we have what is called Bacopa, B-A-C-O-P-A. It's an aquatic plant. It's also called water hyssop, H-Y-S-S-O-P. People in the tropics know about this. It's commonly used. It's been used for thousands of years. It's also very popular in Ayurvedic medicine in India. It's also known as rejuvenating herb. And the Bacopa monnieri, M-O-N-N-I-E-R-I, it's an adaptogen, much like ginseng is. It helps with sensory and motor and cognitive function. And it modulates cortisol neurone transmitters and amyloid. Then you have cordyceps. It's an extremely powerful medicinal mushroom, going back centuries. It's good maintaining your blood sugar, immune activity, turning off inflammation. And ashwagandha, ashwagandha, W-A-G-A-N-D-H-A. It's also known as Indian ginseng or withania. And it's probably the number one Ayurvedic adaptogen. So those are some of the things that you can get that will make a difference and that can help you. All right? So we're all going to be facing stress. It's how we deal with it that can make a difference. I'm Gary Nall. This is our Talk Back segment. No guest, but your chance now. Let's give some calls. Our number to call in from anywhere in Canada, Mexico, or the United States is 888-874-4888. 888-874-4888. And we'll take your calls as soon as they start coming in. I'm out on the road and finishing up a very important documentary. Look forward to premiering it sometime in the next 4 or 5 months. We just premiered one recently on Seeds of Death earlier in the year. It was the War on Health. Just before that, it was American Veterans Betrayed and Forgotten. And before that, it was Death by Medicine. And so we've had 5 major documentaries in 14 months. Now, while the calls are coming in, we're going to take a brief break, come right back. And I still want to share how you can reduce your incidence of heart disease with some new information called PON1. Please stay with us. Welcome all of you to this program. Nice to have you with us. Now, I mentioned earlier that my generation of baby boomers, we have made some serious errors. We put so much emphasis upon materialism, so much identity of me, I, what's mine, selfishness, greed, or stupidity, indifference. Don't want to know, but knowing could help you make healthier choices. I don't care. Defiance. And then one day, we look around and we haven't gone out and demonstrated on behalf of any cause. We haven't protected our environment. We haven't watched our consumption practices. We haven't cared about our diet. We've raised our kids wrong. They're little brats. They're spoiled. They're entitled. They're bouncing off the walls. And now we're faced with some serious problems. Let me show you how serious some of these problems are. This is from Lauren Kelly of Alternate. Quote, nearly half of Americans have no safety net to keep them out of poverty. A new report reveals a fact that too many Americans are familiar with firsthand. Nearly half the nation's residents have no safety net to protect them from falling into poverty in the event of a layoff or other financial misfortune. The recently published Assets and Opportunity Scoreboard from the Corporation for Enterprise Development shows that, quote, nearly 44% of Americans don't have enough savings or other fluid assets to stay out of poverty for more than 3 months if they lose their income. And at the same time, nearly a third of Americans live with no savings at all. Zero. They don't have a nickel. So if we have one third with no savings and one third with just 3 months worth of savings, then how do we change any of this? Could you imagine what is happening? And now you think there'd be some interest in doing something dynamic, but there's not. So we have some problems. We're not addressing them. And more often than not, the people who are facing these problems are not organizing. They're not looking for ways to correct these problems. So that's one problem. And the baby boomers make up the largest group of that. But then there are some issues that I face all the time because I counsel so many of these baby boomers. How many baby boomers are there? Well, right now there's 10,000 baby boomers reaching age 65 every single day. And they will continue that rate for the next 20 years. And that's tough because half of all American workers have less than $10,000 saved for retirement in one of their retirement plans. We are, quote, woefully unprepared for what is coming. This is the biggest retirement crisis in history, and we are not prepared. According to one recent poll, 25% of all Americans in the 46 to 64-year-old age bracket have no retirement. 26% of all Americans in 46 to 64 have no personal savings either. So they have nothing set aside for retirement, no pensions, nothing, and they have no savings. And according to a survey conducted by the Employee Benefit Research Institute, 60% of American workers said the total value of their savings was less than $25,000. Well, that's under a year's worth of savings. Today, one out of every six elderly Americans lives below the poverty level. Yet they're virtually invisible. No one talks about them. In fact, more elderly Americans than ever are finding that they must continue working once they reach the retirement years. We've never had this before. And according to the latest study, 70% of all American workers expect to continue working once they're retired because they can't afford to retire. AARP says 40% of all baby boomers plan to work until they die. And 56% of all American retirees have outstanding debts when they retire. That's something that historically wasn't the case. You spoke with people in the 40s, 50s, 60s, and 70s. When they retired, they generally owned their house. They had retirements, they had pensions and Social Security, they had no debt. Today, completely reversed. In fact, elderly Americans tend to carry much higher balances on their credit cards than younger Americans do. And the average, $8,278, is the average for people over 50. There was a study at the University of Michigan that found Americans 55 and older account for 20% of all bankruptcies. And yet, 12 years ago, they were only 12%. Because they thought that their house would be their investment in their equity in the future. But they borrowed against it, and they shouldn't have. We've had a 178% increase in bankruptcy in the last 15 years. And what's causing most of these bankruptcies among the elderly? The number one cause is medical bills. That's right. More than 60% of the personal bankruptcies in the United States are because of medical bills. Now, has anyone ever stopped and asked why in the world does it cost $75,000 for a particular medication for a year or $200,000 to treat a person with terminal cancer? Why? And we're not asking these questions. Why does it cost $1,400 to spend a night in a hospital? That is without medical care, that's without seeing a doctor or nurse. That's just the cost of being in a hospital. In 1945, there were 42 workers for every retiree receiving Social Security benefits. Today, it's 2.5 workers. And if you eliminate all government workers, that leaves 1.6 private sector workers for every retiree receiving Social Security. Also, I have discussed this in the past, we have 73.2 million people who are going to be on Medicare, and it's over $40 trillion underfunded over the next 20 years. Where's that money going to come from? $38 trillion is the lowest figure I could find. Also, all these pension plans are underfunded. Verizon's is $3.4 billion underfunded. In California, the Orange County Employees Retirement System is estimated to have a $10 billion unfunded pension liability. The state of Illinois has accumulated unfunded pension liabilities of $77 billion. Pension consultant Gerald Miller told California's Little Hoover Commission that state and local government bodies in the state of California have $325 billion in combined unfunded pension liabilities. According to Northwestern University professor John Rowe, the latest estimate of the total amount of unfunded pensions and health care obligations for retirees that state and local governments across the United States have accumulated is $4.4 trillion. 28% of all American workers with a 401k have taken money out of it. And today, 49% of all American workers are not covered by an employment-based pension at all. And right now, a study conducted by Boston's College Center for Retirement Research found that American workers are $6.6 trillion short of what they need to retire comfortably. So, if you want to know why a lot of people should be concerned, that's the reason why. And that is causing stress. And yet, we're not dealing with the stress. We're not dealing with political issues. We vote always for the wrong people. We eat the wrong food. We watch the wrong programs. We listen to the wrong radio. Read the wrong publications. We just seem to be caught in this never-ending cycle of making bad choices. So what are we going to do about it? I have ideas, but I'm interested in your ideas. Give us a call. What can we do as baby boomers, as concerned citizens, as people who have a future, but it's not looking good for most people? And you won't see them. They'll be out of the news cycle. 888-874-4888. Let's say hello to Viveni from Baltimore. Hi.
Yes, Gary. How are you?
Good.
Good. 9 years ago, I was diagnosed with MS, and I understand you've worked with MS patients. And Recently, well, in the last 2 weeks, my neuropathy has really exacerbated, and I was wondering if you could give me any suggestions as to anything that could alleviate this neuropathy that's going on.
What happened just before that that would have precipitated neuropathy?
I'm not sure what prompted this to exacerbate. I really don't know. The only thing I can think of is that I've been using more garlic, but other than that, I don't know.
Well, no, garlic doesn't do that.
I have no idea what caused this to get a little worse.
All right. What are you doing for your multiple sclerosis?
Right now, the only thing I'm doing is changing what I'm eating. I'm doing more juicing now.
But what? Give me an idea. Beyond juicing, what are you juicing and what else are you eating?
I'm juicing like kale and cabbage and cucumber, carrots, celery. I'm doing smoothies with nut milk and coconut water, chocolate, frozen fruits.
Right,
I have been eating bad things lately, some sugar and stuff like that.
All right. So why are you not paying attention to what you're eating is the cause of your neuropathy?
I'm not sure what would exacerbate it.
Hold on. How long have you been listening to this program?
Maybe about a year or so.
Okay. So if you listen regularly, you should have what would be about a Lisa Backlard education in health. And you've heard me say how many times, hundreds, about every single thing that you eat or can drink or breathe or think that's negative will have an absolute effect and is cumulative. You've heard me say that.
Yes,
you?
I know. Yes.
Okay. So you're not paying attention to what I'm saying.
I'm not sure.
Okay. So where do we go from here if you're not willing to really make those changes?
I am willing to make the changes.
Well, but you haven't.
Well,
that's the key.
Well, the thing is that I am totally dependent on someone else to prepare my food. I'm pretty much bedridden now. I'm dependent on other people to prepare my food. But if they're not preparing what I'm asking them to prepare and I'm hungry, then I have to eat what is available.
Okay, but do you understand until such time that you eat the right foods, then your multiple sclerosis is only going to get worse? I believe that what I would do if I were you is I would reach out to some people who are willing to support you in a more holistic way. And therefore, no sugar. You don't have to eat sugar. You don't have to eat fried food. You don't have to eat the very things that cause multiple sclerosis in the first place, because then it's only going to get worse. Now, you've also heard in the last year, you've heard Kenny, the fella from New Jersey, the plumber who had advancing multiple sclerosis. He was under constant medical care. And after they had a meeting with him telling him how he had put railings up and for a wheelchair because it was going to go to the wheelchair and then to the bed, that's when he got serious. Today he's completely normal. He's reversed his multiple sclerosis. I'm going to give you some suggestions. Let's hope that you really take these suggestions seriously. First, the last thing anyone with multiple sclerosis, Alzheimer's, Parkinson's, ALS, memory loss should be consuming would be fried foods, sugars, artificial sweeteners, caffeine, dairy, gluten products, refined carbohydrates, coffee. You have to get rid of all that, 100%. Then you should have at least 5 glasses of fresh juice a day. Start with celery, cucumber, and apple. You can spike that with vitamin C, and that would be good. You should have quality starchy vegetables. Rutabaga is good. Parsnips, turnips, yams, sweet potatoes, all good. Lots of fruits. The more berries you eat, the better it is for you. Blueberries, blackberries, raspberries, black cherries, pomegranate, dark cherries, all outstanding for you. The nutrients you need would be coenzyme Q10. Generally, 500 milligrams 3-4 times a day. Coenzyme A, which helps detoxify your system. MSM, which is a methyl sulfomethane. It helps keep your cell walls permeable. GLA, gamma linolenic acid. It's an essential fatty acid. Then flaxseed oil, garlic, the B complex at 100 milligrams, sometimes twice a day. B12, 1,000 micrograms twice a day. Choline and inositol, generally 500 milligrams. Probiotics, calcium magnesium at 1,500 milligrams from citrate. And that's important because a deficiency of calcium magnesium predisposes you to multiple sclerosis. Then I would use creatine. It helps counteract muscle depletion. And free-form amino acids also help your muscles. Grapeseed extract and NADH, generally 100 milligrams divided doses. Potassium is important, 7-keto-DHEA. Vitamin C with quercetin 6 times a day, vitamin D3 and vitamin E, vitamin K, all good, and burdock, echinacea, and red clover. And I mentioned in the previous segment, cordyceps, cordy, C-O-R-D-Y, ceps, C-E-P-S. It's a Chinese herb that improves memory, and so you want to use that. All right. But no more taking a step back because you work against yourself. We want to see you do well. Take care. Let's say hello to Dennis from Chicago. Hi, Dennis.
Hello, Gary. I had a question. I've been hearing about something called the Miracle Mineral Solution, something like that.
Yeah, what is it?
It's sodium chloride solution. And apparently it's drank or take it small doses or something.
I'm sorry, and, I don't know what it is. If you sent me the information on it, I'll be happy to look into it, but...
Yeah, it's called the Miracle Mineral Solution. It has to do with something with the sodium chloride getting in your body and killing toxins. Apparently, this doctor that's created it, is healing people with HIV, AIDS, herpes, different kinds of things, just completely
okay.
Healing.
I can't say yes or no. I don't want to criticize it, and I won't. I have to look at it, look at the actual science, the real science, not what someone says. But if you send me any information or a link to it, I'll be happy to look into it, okay? Thanks a lot, Dennis. Nice to speak with you. We'll take another call. We've got a full roster here, 888-874-4888. Let's say hello to Max from Florida. Hi, Max.
Yes, hi, Gary. First time caller and listener also. And my concern is how to increase my level of energy.
All right. The question actually should be divided into two segments. What do you believe or are aware of that could be depleting your energy? And then not doing that will help you, and then I can show you beyond that how to energize yourself. But what do you believe that you've been doing that's causing depletion of energy?
I don't know. I was eating everything besides sugar and caffeine. I cut the caffeine because it makes me high blood pressure. So when I stop, my blood pressure gets okay, stabilizes. So I stopped drinking coffee and sugar, almost anything. I just put a little bit.
How much coffee were you drinking?
Before, between 4 and 5 a day.
Wow. Okay. Well,
as soon as I
you realize
that,
you're up there around 500 milligrams of caffeine a day, depending upon the coffee. That's enough to dysregulate your energy metabolism, the mitochondria, and especially what is called ATP, adenosine triphosphate production. It's even enough to cause what we call mega channeling, where the mitochondria, the actual energy production within the cell, leaches out. So first, no sugar, no refined carbohydrates, which break down into monosaccharides or simple sugars, no caffeine, no alcohol, which is pure sugar in the body, and destroys nutrients. And then you have to build back your detoxification mechanisms inside the liver. Reduced glutathione can help you do that. And taking that reduced glutathione.
Okay.
And then the glutamine, D-ribose, carnitine, both, choline and inositol, NADH, ginseng, tocotrienols, and tocopherols. All of those are beneficial. All the best to you, Max. I'm Gary Nall. We're here to take calls and on our talkback program and to see what we can do to help you. Let's say hello to Luann Panessi, who's standing by. Hi, Luann.
Luann, can you hear me okay? Yeah, I'm here.
Sure can. Yes, hi.
Hi. One of the things that people have commented on is this whole issue of what's happening in Greece. You know, a couple of years ago, you were talking about country by country what was going to happen as the economy changed, as our politics and, you know, kept being more and more corrupt. And there are pictures on the internet that are very, very disturbing. They were actually having now in Greece a fruit and vegetable handout, and a man was trampled and very badly injured. And it called attention to the desperate conditions in this crisis-hit country. Some 55 tons of produce was given away by farmers who were protesting high production costs. And the chaos was sparked when food stalls ran out of fruits and vegetables, prompting dozens of people to rush to a nearby truck. It's like an every man for himself situation. And this is what the Greek economy has devolved to. And many people have commented on this, and a lot of people, Gary, are saying that this is exactly what you spoke about a few years ago on the air. And they said they shudder when they think that this is one of many of the predictions that you've spoken about, and they're concerned about this, and, you know, could this actually happen in other countries, and especially could it happen here?
Are you familiar with a former American statesman named Adlai Stevenson?
Yes.
He said it is often easier to fight for principles than to live up to them. Mm. When we take a look at something as simple as austerity, the solutions are transparent. You're asking people who lived within a system that everybody gained. The wealthiest didn't pay their fair share of taxes. Those in the middle class were given jobs that they really didn't have to work at. Everybody bled the system. The generals during a particular period in Greece's history got enormous contracts with German submarine makers. Why in the world would Greece need any armed forces? It doesn't need anything. No one's going to invade Greece. And they're not going to invade anyone else. But no one questioned any of that. You didn't question organized crime in Greece. If you did, you got killed. You didn't question the government's massive spending on public projects where people who were favored, friends of the politicians, got big kickbacks. You didn't, there was a line you didn't cross if you were the average person criticizing how many people it took to fill a job because you may be one of those people. And the rich looked at all this and said, well, we shouldn't be paying our taxes in any case. So all of this led to a systemic breakdown until one day the Greeks had a greater debt load than what they could support with their income flow. Instead of simply acknowledging the mistakes they had made and starting to tighten up each of these sectors, forcing people to pay by a flat tax. And if they didn't pay it, withdraw it automatically from their bank accounts, or if they lived there, put a freeze on all transfer of money. So you had none of the rich flowing their money out of the country, seize their assets. But they didn't do that. Instead, they brought in Goldman Sachs, and Goldman Sachs ended up earning $400 million for giving him bad advice, teaching him how to lie, cover up. Don't let the world know how mismanaged your affairs are. So now the European Union steps in. There are 27 nations participating, 17 in their currency, and they say, in order for us to loan you money to pay your creditors, you have to go through austerity. And the austerity was simple. We're going to take away the bottom out of your minimum wage. We're going to take away your pensions, much of your pensions. We're going to fire an awful lot of people, and that will save some money. But most importantly, through structural adjustments, we're going to privatize everything that hitherto had been free or at low income. We're going to privatize your electric, your water, your roads, your ports. Everything that we can exploit, we will. What the average person didn't appreciate, not even in Greece, is that the bailout didn't bail out the Greek people or the Greek government. It was money that was guaranteed against those people who had taken positions, realizing that you make a lot more money when someone's in a crisis and cannot pay their bills. You roll over their debt and you keep compounding the interest. And so every time the European Union and the European Central Bank and the International Monetary Fund or bondholder says, yeah, we'll give you another $20 billion or $7 billion or $100 billion, they were giving it to themselves. Nobody in Greece got a nickel. That's the game that was played. So then I predicted at the time, this can only have one outcome. And that is that after the initial stages of austerity, people who had lived within the system and had just lived fairly well, but not extravagantly, those people would have inflated prices, inflation would hit, and they couldn't afford the food or the same amount of food or the same quality of food as they had before. Small business people would go out of work. The infrastructures that had been kept in place, clean streets, safe streets, emptying the garbage, opening hospitals, those would all be adversely affected. All so that every nickel possible that could be squeezed out of an already suffering people with one of the highest unemployment rates in the world, certainly for an industrial country, would go back to the bankers. Now, mind you, the bankers helped create the problem. Now they were super exploiting it. These are what we call vulture capitalist, and that's what they did. So I said that there'll be three stages to what happens in Greece. You will see the same thing in Spain. You'll see the same thing in Portugal, in Italy, and in Ireland. And here's the way it works. First, you protest. The unions must protest if they have any credibility or power left with the people. But that won't work because the fix will be in. The politicians who are in their government will vote for the austerity packages. Once more austerity happens, and after more people are going without food and having to eat every other day, or dumpster diving, or crime is rampant, you can't go anywhere in Greece now without being victimized or susceptible to victimization, then the younger people who realize they've been sold out will start to get angry. And then that leads to the third stage. You'll have an anarchy going against the government and going against authority figures. The government, in turn, will fight back, which they have done. They have shot people. They've beaten people. We never see this in the United States. I watch it because the news sources I use are not... I never watch any of the idiots on NBC, ABC, CBS, Fox, or CNN. They're just... they're disgusting. They're pimping all the time for the special interest. So what will happen now in the next 24 months is there'll be complete and total anarchy with buildings being burned, cars burned. You'll see police fought. You'll see citizens killed. scan, then it'll be a tinderbox. What you saw with the Arab Spring will ignite, but on a much more voracious level, because the Greeks are going to, at that point, they'll have nothing to lose. When you have regular people and senior citizens trampling each other to get an orange, and we never see that. Also, the fat cat, greedy, degenerate, low-life scum, and there is none other than at all of the financial institutions. They're all criminals. The International Monetary Fund, the World Bank, the European Union, Merkel, what a little Nazi. All these people, they're all guilty. And yet, no one in the American media will challenge them. Instead, you'll have the people at Fox say, look at those, you know, anarchists. Look at the people. They're angry. And we'll look at the people who are fighting, but we won't look at what they're fighting for, and we won't look at the people who are repressing them, killing them, as if now we need security. And when you have the consumer rising up, you'll have almost a fascistic response. Put them down. Put them in their place. And, of course, the citizens aren't armed, so it'll be a one-sided ass-kicking. But the world will, sooner or later, at least not in America, we don't like to watch this. Will this happen to America? Absolutely, possibly not. Our intellectual class is incapable of anything. Our professional class is too greedy and too indifferent. Our wealthy are morons. And besides, no really rich wife of any of the hedge fund owners wants to get her face hit by someone, because it'll disrupt all the cosmetic surgeries she has. So who exactly is going to protest anything in America? Well, why don't you ask who has protested? And the answer is no one, outside of a tiny little percentage of people that protested with Occupy and the Latinos who protested against immigration, but for nothing else. The unions aren't going to do it, because the heads of the unions who would control that are in the power privileged position. So we will be the nation of frogs in the boiling water. And the rest of the world will fight back. They will lose, but they'll still fight back. And the wealthiest, they win, as they always have, for at least the next 5 years. It'll take something extraordinary. It'll take an environmental impact. It'll take something beyond the political process to make any change anywhere in the industrial world. Okay?
Yeah.
I'm Gary Noll. We're out of time. I want to thank you all for listening. Look forward to sharing more on the next program.